Charities supporting more than 500,000 New Zealanders have reported a 40% increase in food demand last year, and that's end 2023. They say the cost of living crisis and job layoffs so far this year means the situation's now likely even worse, and providers will struggle to meet the soaring demand, especially over winter. Yesterday, Stats NZ reported a 6.2% rise in the average household cost of living in the year to March 31st, while credit company Centrix's April credit indicator said financial hardship was continuing to rise and more than 460,000 Kiwis are behind on debt payments. The New Zealand Food Network has more than 60 member organisations, which include Auckland and Christchurch City Missions and Salvation Armies in both the North and South Islands, iwi providers and others, who between them support 630,000 people. The network's latest six-monthly report to the end of 2023, released in the past week, also found a third of clients were seeking support for the first time. Gavin Findlay, New Zealand Food Network's chief executive, says the survey, quote, reveals a stark reality, unquote, and that the number of Kiwis struggling to access food is continuing to rise. Good morning, Gavin.
Good morning, Catherine.
With us also is Ian Foster, who's chief executive of South Auckland Christian Food Bank. Morena, Ian.
Good morning.
So, Gavin, these survey results, they're looking at the second half of last year. What's happened since?
There's just been a continuing evolution of the cost of living impact across people's lives and how they have to prioritise where their meagre disposable income goes. And unfortunately, food, as harsh as it may sound, food sometimes becomes a discretionary purchase for these people, which is where organisations like the ones that Ian runs and you know, we represent throughout the country have to come into play to help those people.
Is it a fair assumption? Do you have any early data that suggests this picture's got worse since that data series was ended?
I can certainly say it's not getting any better in terms of the numbers. It's taken a few years to for us to really work with our partners to understand some good measurements, and we are quite comfortable now that the numbers that are coming out are really representative. And you know, we do have a great relationship with our organisations who, you know, quite often tell us if there's marked increases, and certainly there's been no decrease since the end of the year, and it's likely that it is slightly worse than what the numbers are saying.
What your research is showing is interesting. Often we talk about food parcels, right? But by using this network, which covers so much of the support for people needing food, you're actually able to come up with individuals needing food support. And how do you reach that figure? Over what time do you reach that figure?
Well, as I said, it's taken us 2 or 3 years. Many organisations, measure their impact differently, whether it be FANAR members, whether it be food parcels. Over the years, we've tried to get a consistent measurement across all our organisations, and we're quite comfortable that where we are at is a lot more representative than it was in the early days.
Is it measuring someone who visits once a week? Is that the metric?
No, the metric, it's across the broad range.
Gotcha.
So it's not everybody needing food every single meal for every single day. So it is the number of people who are reaching out for food support, whether that be once or twice a week or whether it be once or twice a day.
It's not, you know, once a year, though. This is a reasonably frequent request to be counted in this number. And this number represents roughly 12 to 13% of the population. I mean, it's hard to compare with previous eras, but would you say that is very high, historically speaking?
I would say so. I would say that one of the more revealing facts was that one third of those people who are coming to our partner organisations for support are coming for the first time. So whether it's circumstances have dictated that they've done that, or they've run out of their own resources, or their whole entire network is kind of tapped out in terms of that support. So it is a big thing for someone to knock on an organisation's door and saying, look, I just need help. That really is quite a challenge for many people, and certainly in certain cultures, it's a big thing. So for them to actually do that is quite revealing.
It's clearly also not just about unemployment. Another figures out just this week, of course, rising to 4.3% yesterday by the measure that is used, and a good higher amount of underemployment, people working fewer hours than they want to. But that is still an historically comparatively moderate unemployment rate. So working households must be in these numbers, Gavin?
Absolutely. So, you know, even dual income, you know, when you've got the overall cost of actually living, you know, housing obviously is a main component of that, but food prices going up, fuel, you know, the access to everyday normal products for living is just so much higher. So that does, if you're living week to week, paycheck to paycheck and doing okay, it doesn't take an awful lot for you to drop down into that area of, I actually need support and help. And that's where we come in.
You distribute food to at least 60 food hubs. So they can be charities, iwi providers, food banks. You know, many of the biggest providers are in your network. Can you paint a picture of the scale of the operation of this around the country, Gavin?
Yeah, I'll try, Catherine. It's quite hard to envisage what 29 tonnes of food every single working day going into the community is, but that's what we do. So whether it be the, you know, surplus food that's you know, being gifted or donated by organisations for multiple different reasons, produce that has been rejected as being too small, too large, different colours. So you know, in terms of the entire availability of surplus food, you know, we've got plenty of food to be able to distribute it to the community. It's just the resources to be able to do that. So 29 tonnes a day is our current distribution. But organisations, again, one of the other measurements that we came up with, the organisations that we work with, they rate their ability to meet the demand is only 3 out of 5.
So
we could be more.
3 out of 5. What happens to the other 2 out of 5? We can't help.
Well, they're just exactly. There's no. It's a combination of mainly resources and the ability to meet that demand. You know, it does take people. It does take costs. It does take buildings. It does take infrastructure. And you know, and that just isn't there for many of the organisations.
Is what you're saying that on average there's 40% unmet need for those seeking help?
That's what the organisations are saying. So whether that's only partial help or just absolutely not being able to meet that need, I think what they're saying is if you were to give us 40% more food, we would find homes for it.
What about your own situation? I understand that on average, these more than 60 food hubs rely on you for close to half, or 41%, getting on towards half, of their food that they provide, which means some obviously rely on you much more. Can you continue to meet the demand that the hubs within the network are asking of you?
Again, you know, we work within the realms of the resources and funding regimes that we have, and our team over the years have been able to do that really efficiently, and we will continue to maximise our productivity to get that food out there. You know, we work with industry, obviously, you know, work with government in terms of, you know, the funding and working with industry to continually come up with better, more innovative ways and opportunities. And there are many, many of those opportunities, Catherine. We're working with the likes of DOC on wild animal recovery operations, how we can utilise that product, bycatch in the fish fleet, tens of thousands of tonnes of produce that just get lain to waste in the fields. So there's There's a number of mechanisms where we can access more food. It's just about how those are resourced and funded.
Which I suppose is the good news part of this organisation, because you're relatively young, I think, began around the beginning of the pandemic. What was happening to the food that you're now distributing to members before this organisation was set up?
Well, we know for sure, that about 60 to 70% of that product was just going off to landfill. There was no mechanisms or ability to work at the scale that we work at prior to that. So companies would have that surplus. They'd ring around three, four, five organizations to be able to offload the product, but that still wasn't enough. And organic material in landfill is such a corrosive environmental hazard. It's it really is. There's a great stat out there. If food in landfill was a country on its own in the world, it would be the third largest greenhouse gas emitter on the planet. So we want to avoid that at all costs. We don't grow food to throw it away. We grow food for humans to eat it, and that's what we're trying to ensure.
Some further insights from your survey that's been released in the last week is that nearly 90% of the food hubs, these are your member organisations, stated the rising cost of living as the top reason for seeking food support. Low household individual income due to low-paying jobs was two-thirds, and unexpected bills or expenses was getting up to 60%. But for 90%, it is that inflation rate that is outstripping their incomes.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, food in particular, although it has come down over the last 12 to 18 months, was way outstripping. It was up at 10, 11, 12% year on year. And there were some mitigating factors in that in terms of the weather events that we had at the beginning of 2023 that meant that fruit and vegetable availability and this costing was a lot higher. So again, when you layer, in that, where do I spend my money with food outstripping inflation, it became a casualty. And people need roofs over their heads. They need the ability to travel to work. So you can't drop those as a cost. But so turning to food support is what a lot of people are having to do.
What are your concerns? What are your fears for the winter, Gavin? Is that typically a time of rising demand?
It's a byproduct, because more cost is generally utilized for heating houses and energy consumption. What we certainly don't want to have, and we do hear every winter that, certainly in the elderly community, not being able to heat the house. Layer that on top of not being able to feed yourself, and that becomes a real challenge. So we do see a slight rise, but not as big a spike as you would imagine.
However, as we've mentioned and we're about to discuss further, redundancies are underway in both the public and private sector, and there may be more and more people struggling to meet those basics. Gavin, thank you. Gavin Findlay, who is New Zealand Food Network Chief Executive. As we said, they've got more than 60 member organisations, including many of the biggest providers you associate with food support: Auckland and Christchurch City Missions, Salvation Armies in both the North and South Island, iwi providers, and others. Between them, supporting 630,000 people. And that's a measure of reasonable regularity, perhaps once a week or more, coming for food support. Ian Foster's Chief Executive of the South Auckland Christian Food Bank. Welcome again, Ian. What are you seeing in terms of demand at your food bank and the stories of the people, perhaps some of those people needing help for the first time?
The story isn't good. The reality is, we have seen massive increases since post-COVID. And the worrying statistic for me is, if we look at our statistics prior to COVID, our Maori and Pacifica families represented about 85% of our client base. That changed through COVID for obvious reasons. People couldn't work, things like that. If we look at our statistics now, it's virtually identical. It's actually gone up 1%. So we had 85% pre-COVID. Now we've got 86% made up of Pacifica and Maori families. And the worrying statistic is that our Maori families have gone from the high 30s up to now about half of our client base. And the other statistic, which is virtually exactly the same, is the type of client we have are primarily, some of them are working, but the primary client that we have is a beneficiary. So they are the lowest paid, they are the most at risk. And, you know, the reality is, you know, we're being told, you know, there's going to be some pain. We're in a financial crisis. The reality is, though, the lowest paid people in our country, or the people getting the least amount of money per week, you know, it's not about not being able to go and buy a coffee or go out for dinner or go for a holiday, the things you're letting go. It's we can't feed our children. We can't feed our families, you know, and that is in a country that produces so much food, you know, it's just not right.
What's happened to demand? I think it really started picking up from last August, and that's why this data is helpful. We've always got to remember that data represents people, but it does help understand what's happening and what has happened to demand since August.
So from August last year, our numbers have increased. They haven't increased the sort of numbers that Gavin's talking, but we're talking 19.06% for numbers from 2022 to 2023. I guess you need to go back, though, for us, from pre-COVID to where we're at now. We're operating at about 350% higher than we ever were. And that the cost of living crisis is a major factor. The other issue is that a number of food banks, major ones, are having to restrict the amount of food they're giving out because of funding and lack of food. So that is, you know, a major problem. We are in the same position. We normally cut off at 1 o'clock. Some days we have to cut off earlier simply because we don't have the resource to meet the demand. You know, and that's absolutely devastating when, as an organisation, we're all about helping people and people in genuinely in need, and they come to us and we can't help them. So it's, you know, and the fact that the problem has got so much worse and, you know, things have been cut back, funding has been cut back, it's a real worry. It really is.
What needs to happen, particularly going into winter, where, as Gavin pointed out, energy costs typically rise, and also, as we know, there are more and more people in both public and private sectors losing jobs, and the unemployment rate is rising, the underemployment rate is high, the youth employment rate is rising. If this is our immediate future, and possibly for a time, what needs to happen to feed people in?
Well, for us as an organisation, and any food bank, we are the bottom of the cliff guy. Like, we are giving out food to meet an immediate need. The reality is, though, that if people come to us, they after they've had assistance from us once, we want them to go to budgeting. The reality with budgeting is most of our clients have financial problems. The financial, the budgeters work with that, and they can look at their income. Sometimes they can get, you know, a little bit of extra money. The reality is, the biggest change that can happen is those people go into employment, and it can even be just part-time to help them, you know, over that hump. So that is the best thing that can happen for our clients. And yeah, that obviously is life-changing, because if they're getting a benefit and they can get even just a part-time job where they can earn, you know, $80-$100, quite often that can be the difference between feeding their families or not.
I thank you both very much for your time. That is Ian Foster, who is with the South Auckland Christian Food Bank. Gavin Findlay is with us also from the New Zealand Food Network, which has more than 60 member organisations and helps more than 630,000 New Zealanders. That was at as the end of 2023. I know they are running a food donation and fundraiser campaign at the moment called Pitch In, which I will mention as an aside.